Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. This is our live call-in show where you get to weigh in on the topic of the week. Today's topic is U.S. history, and the phone number to call, in case you haven't heard it throughout our last couple weeks of pitching for our spring pledge drive, the number is 503-325-0010. I'll probably sneak in a couple of requests that you do donate to the station, but my one request is, since we use the phone lines for this show, if you don't mind waiting until after 10 o'clock to call in with your pledge. Otherwise, you're welcome to go online, coastradio.org, or you can send us a check, P.O. Box 269, Astoria 97103. Okay, fading out the classical guitar there and welcoming our guest, Ron Craig. So happy to have you with us today. Can you hear me, Ron? Okay.
I'm just joy to be here.
Oh, good. You can
yes,
hear me.
I can.
Great. Thanks. Welcome, Ron. So I've got a little bit of info that I'm going to share about our special guest. Ron Craig's a filmmaker, an author. He's the executive director of the Astoria International Film Festival, and he's got a 16-year history with York, beginning with a 1999 documentary, Who Was York? A New Look at the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Craig attended the 2001 White House ceremony in which York received the honorary rank of sergeant. A frequent speaker about York, Craig served on the design team for the Lewis and Clark Expedition commemorative coin in 2004, and Ron has received multiple awards for his work on York, including the African American Preservation Alliance Award in 2005, the Gracie Allen Award for Outstanding Documentary for his work The Undiscovered Explorer, Imagining York, and finally for he received a regional Emmy nomination for his documentary Searching for York through Oregon Public Broadcasting. So what a thrill and a pleasure and an honor to have you on the show today, Ron. I'm going to invite you to kind of get us started. And
I'm having fun.
Yeah, great.
It's really good.
So, you know, we've kind of talked a little bit about history in our couple of conversations, and so now I'm going to invite you to talk a little bit about history to the folks that are listening.
Well, let me put a couple little footprints here or breadcrumbs out here. Number one is...
Ron, I turned on our delay, and I think it goofed us up. So there might be a delay, but I'm turning it back off, and we should be fine from now on.
Okay, thank you. I'm a baby boomer, to put things in a proper historical perspective. Okay, let's we're getting it.
Are you hearing the delay still?
Okay.
Okay, it's bypassed. It should work now.
Okay.
Immediate conversations. This is great.
I love it. Once again, like I said, I've taken history from a philosophical point of view. The idea that I am a baby boomer has kind of put some of the things in perspective as far as my approach on history. And as a young man, I wound up spending... I'll say 1968, because like I said, we're dealing with history, 67, 68, in that time frame. And everybody knows from a historical thing went on during that time period, especially as a boomer, we had some serious, significant things that happened in history, Martin Luther King, Kennedy, all these different things that were going on. So I was never in the country during that time. But yet at the same time, like I said, as a 21-year-old, I'm living in Europe. And I'm seeing all the aspects of the Holocaust. And we're talking U.S. history, but yet at the same time, here I am, a 21-year-old walking these grounds where this horrific historical events had happened. And once again, that philosophical portion of the whole thing came to me, because it's not for everybody, but I have always felt I had sort of a spiritual link to be able to go to certain places, and I can feel their presence. And I don't defend that one way or another. I state it and I leave it alone. If people don't want to go with it, it's about me. It's not about them. So with the idea of looking at that sort of history, coming back here to the States, I looked at my own history. And it put me in a position that I really It was kind of fearful. And like I said, I'm going to be a little, I won't be that specific about it because like it's history already. It's documented. It's out there for people to be able to look at it. But then it's one of those things that, once again, getting back to the United States and start looking at my own history, my family, they were from essentially from the South and as an African-American. And then I had did some inquiries with my grandparents, and which they had been very, very silent about this. And July 4th, 1930, my grandmother's father was murdered in ML, Alabama, and his brother was lynched. And there was another woman that was pregnant that was also lynched. And I look at a lot of this as far as from a historical perspective, and as far as looking at it from a racial thing, I'm African-American, so I can't ignore that portion of it. But still, again, I don't care if you're from Australia or you're from New Zealand or however you want to look at it and stuff as far as our history. And what that did for me personally is put me in a position even more so to want to know history in general. Now, I've looked at these things and from a perspective of U.S. history, and I pretty much looked at it U.S. history slash hidden heroes. And we have so many people globally, and just say right here in the United States, that have not been acknowledged. And for me, that was really, really significant. And once again, take you back a little history, growing up in Oregon, I was in the Boy Scouts. And it was one of these situations, everybody in the Boy Scouts, you do these little pageantries and all that, so they get things going on. So we were doing a thing about Lewis and Clark, okay? Anybody who was a Boy Scout know that Lewis and Clark is kind of the godfathers of the Boy Scouts and everything as far as knowing about them. So we were doing a pageant that involved Lewis and Clark. And so they dressed me up, so to speak, you know, as Meriwether Lewis. Now, I knew that there was an African-American, a black person that was there, but I did not know that much about it because I'll be very frank with it. Nobody did. The stuff that was written was very inaccurate. And so the response of my sort of handlers was the fact that, you know, me inquiring about that, me being looking like York more so than Meriwether Lewis, well, the conversation got to the point of looking at, well, he was a slave, Ron. You don't want to be a slave. End of conversation. So once again, fast forward. And so we get to, you know, 1999. And with the bicentennial coming up, I looked at the information that was out there, and there was very little information that was put out there. Sacagawea was way out there, but nobody knew about her per se. You can't go anywhere coast to coast, not find a school, a park or something like that, as far as a icon, Sacagawea, but no one really knew that much about her. At the same time as far as York. So that was my journey to be able to put that out. And I was so amazed that we had gone through all this period, and really it was only one book that was out at the time. And there were, I think it was two books almost at that point that told more about Seaman, the dog on the expedition. Because I didn't know the dog talked or wrote books. But yet at the same time, we had nothing about York. And so to be able to jump on that and look at it and give people a really sort of a broader perspective of this quote hidden hero, it put me in a situation where the fact that I just enjoyed the heck of doing it. And I won't go into all the as far as the details with it, as far as learning about it, other than the fact that it's taken me, we'll say, from the White House all the way to Cape Disappointment, as far as seeing these different aspects of the U.S. history. And what was so disturbing to me was the fact, with along with Sacagawea and York in 1805, the fact that they were up here on the Columbia River, the North Shore, and voted. Okay, well, even if you don't know the whole story as far as the core of discovery, that flashpoint to me was like the fact you had a Native American woman that voted, and an African-American slave that voted. Now, to set the thing straight as far as they look at it as they're taking a poll. Okay, well, however you want to define a poll, vote, or whatever it is. Some of the academics say, well, it's a poll. Well, still, again, for me, it was more personal from a historical perspective because they asked them what they thought about it. Now, in 1805, that was not the situation. You were not going to ask a woman, indigenous woman, and the fact of an African-American slave as far as what their history was. So, you know, those little things, you know, kind of popped up with me. And once again, to be able to do everything I could, we wound up doing like three different films, a radio show. We got Danny Glover involved in one of the radio shows and stuff. And the fact of he, when he looked at it, you know, the concept of it, he was just blown away. He had no idea. And James DePriest, who was the director of the Portland Symphony, I was able to interview him. And I'm tossing these names out primarily because these are people, significant people within the scope of entertainment or being out there and knowing what's going on. Well, the fact that James DePriest, he was just totally blown away. And to the point that he had no idea, this guy is just wasn't the guy playing a harmonica in the bathroom and stuff. He was really a significant person as far as culturally. And he was almost, in fact, insulted because being in Portland and dealing with a lot of, should I say, significant people culturally, that he found that very few of them even knew about that. So it was just really kind of a strange sort of thing, once again, to be able to put the information out there. And to me, at the end of the day, it was so gratifying to know that I put that little tick out there for somebody to look at. Was for me personally, it's more about putting the information out there, what people do about with it. That's not up to me. And yet at the same time, from a historical perspective, even today, as far as with social media, so many things are out there as far as saying that, well, this is not, it's false, it's misinformation, whatever it is. Well, with me, like I said, the idea from a perspective, you look at these different circumstances, and like I said, I'll post them on social media as far as the different things, but all the lines that are there go back to what actually happened. And in fact, once again, I'll go back to York. If you had read some of the information that was out prior to 1930s or so about York, he was just this dancing dandy and hanging out. And, you know, they would even, we were able to go have a street in Portland, York Street, named for him. It's the significance of that as far as having a street named for this African-American. And the irony of the whole thing, it's with the Northwest Portland. It's in the same area where the they had the bicentennial out there, as far as, I mean, the centennial out there in the Northwest area. And the fact that this street was there, but nobody had any idea that it was named for him. And like I said, once again, it's one of those things that you look at. For me personally, it was just so gratifying to know that we were able to go before the city council and have them do it. And they were just totally excited about the situation as far as doing it. And then, historically, kind of jumping all over the place as far as these different things are going on. And then in 2004, I was fortunate to work with the Clatsop County Genealogical Society. And they brought, put together a program for the descendants of the 33 members of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Now, we worked with them and did the filming. Like, we have only film footage of that specific event. And it was interesting for people how they found their links. And everybody knows this, your historical links back in the day were definitely on the Bible. And so the people be able to put forth as far as their history. Now, the idea that you have, you know, all these members coming here to Astoria and Seaview, that they were, you know, connected to the core of discovery. For me, it was just fascinating to be able to, like I said, the people that, you know, that they solicited as far as being able to tell their stories, as far as this descendant reunion. Everybody has reunions they go to, you know, it's kind of one of the typical things is having, you know, your family together. But to have all these members, and for me, it was just really, really incredible. One of the side notes to that is we did a group photograph over in Seaview. And like I said, this is all, it was August of 2004. We were all there. And with the idea of being able to tell the story with the group photograph, I stood at one of the portions in the group. And one of my colleagues had asked me, you know, are you related to York? I says, no. I said, but the idea, we do not know his bloodline. That's just the way it was as a slave. So what I did, took the initiative to stand in the photo shoot So anybody to see that, they see all these people that are there related, and it's one black person there. It's me. So what they're going to do is say, I didn't know there was a black person on there. So all I did is put a breadcrumb out there for them to be able to look at that. And then they're going to look, okay, who was that guy? Okay, it was York. And so there we go. And so the same thing, you know, as far as once again with Sakaga Wea, as far as, you know, she, some of her points of history that people just didn't know. Because once again, to know one's history is very empowering. And with that, in lecturing to young people, is the fact of being able to go out there and look at your history. And so some of the things that I've suggested to them in the past is the fact to be able to go and find the most senior person in their family and do a modest interview with that person, put it on their phone and do it. And like I said, we all know from a philosophical, psychological point of view that as people mature, get older, 80, 90s, whatever it is, they enjoy telling these stories, because we've always heard these things like, you know, oh, I didn't know Uncle Raymond did so, so, and so, and he's been dead for 2 years. So the idea of being able to do that, and that's only if a person feels they want to be able to interview that person. Then secondly, the fact that person wants to tell that story. I said, because it's one of those situations where you put it out there, and I think people are very excited to be able to hear that history, because personally, with my experience, once again, go back a bit, as far as seeing all these things in Europe, as far as the Holocaust and having this philosophical feel for it, and then finding out that my generation, as far as had these lynchings and murders, and then Montgomery, Alabama, within a couple of years ago, they opened the lynching museum as far as memorial there. And what they've done is taken soil from each one of these areas where lynchings actually were documented. The particular lynching, so with my family and stuff, all of a sudden I realized that, you know, I'm sending, you know, back in the days at 21 years of age and the Holocaust, and then going to Montgomery and seeing that, you know, the turf, from the area where my family was lynched. And it put me in a perspective as far as appreciating history. And I don't really, you know, as far as there was things that my parents didn't say, tell me about, but we had family reunions later on, and everybody wore, the men, the women, wore these t-shirts with the family logo stuff on it and white pants. The t-shirts were red. And what I found out is the fact that it was symbolic, because this all happened on the 4th of July in 1930. So what did that do for me, the 4th of July, independence, though, you know, the lynching of my family. And it's not that I wear a t-shirt about it. It's an internal thing that helps me along the line as far as being able to look at history in general. So the idea that the shirt was red, it was symbolic of the fact that the blood had been shared, and the fact that he was also a minister. My great-great-grandfather was a minister. And that particular day, he had had a white suit on. For whatever reason, style it, but, and it was all bloody. And he was able to get his family out the back door, but they had a bounty on the family name. And so all these things, like I said, I did had no idea about all these different aspects of my history. And it was, you know, looking at, well, why did this happen? Once again, history footnote. It was $3.50 over the sale of a battery. And I just looked at it, what? And he was quite, as far as he was a farmer, he was quite well off and stuff, but they confiscated his land, all those different things that happened. So once again, to be able to put it in perspective, as far as being able to look at the history. And also, you know, as a child growing up here, you know, people say history is boring. History is not boring. History has to be taught. And I've gone time and time again and told students, in fact, do not shake your finger at your teachers or instructors. The information was not available, because in 1999, be able to go and find a book on York, you weren't going to find it. So you can't blame the instructor for it. And for me to pick up the baton and say, okay, this is what we got to do to be able to put it out there. So it's overall, in fact, of being able to see these little historical flashpoints, because like I said, growing up, the idea that female or women's contribution to history? Well, it was this gal who made a flag. Yeah, okay. There was a couple of nurses in the Civil War. Well, that's, you know, we look at that and that's what we grew up with because that's what was written. But to be able to look at it, because once again, with the postings I do on the social media and stuff, once again, people are like, oh my God. And I keep telling people the idea that, as I stated before, it's empowering to know your history. Because we did, with the film festival, we did two different films that reflected on that. And once again, I tried, you know, as far as political, people can affix some sort of political statement they want. So that's not up to me. But the fact of being, putting it out there, because the movie that we shared was Hidden Heroes. So the idea that these women were computers, and people said, they're computers. I said, yeah, before they had laptops, they had computers. There were people. And yeah, these women were involved in it. Stuff. They were African Americans. Well, almost at the same time, the parallel with that is the fact that there was another film called The Help, and which dealt with domestic help, servants, workers in Mississippi. And in lecturing about this, I would always leave it with a point. There were two different flash. There are one flashpoint that was involved in both of these cases, whether it was The Help or it was a Hidden Figures. And I don't know if, you know, everybody look at it and say, okay, I see that. Well, for me, it was like, oh my God. And that was a fact that, and this, like I say, it's all documented history. As far as these women being the computers, the mathematicians, they were not allowed to use the restroom in the same building because they were black. So once again, people are scratching their head. Okay. So The Help, okay, Mississippi, they had actually passed ordinance, the fact that you could not have, if you were a domestic worker in the household, you could not use the bathroom, the restroom in that home. And so I said, defecation, it's feces between the two, mathematicians and domestic help. And they're scratching their head. And I said, I'm not making this up. And I think once again, when you see this course of history, that's what it comes down to being. At the same time, there was a colleague of mine, and she had made a conversation with a dear friend of hers, a close friend, and she was making a number of, should I say, racial slurs in dealing with people of the Jewish faith. And she'd been doing this for years and never knew that she was doing it. So once again, it's not so much you can play on the race card, it's from a historical perspective that people do not understand. And just to, for me, I want to be able to encourage people to open the books that are out there and stuff. And like I said, with the social media right now, you can sit there in 2 minutes and find out this, this, this. And I think one of the significant things that happened a number of years ago, and all of a sudden people started reacting to Columbus. It was a holiday. That was it. Praise Columbus, Columbus. But nobody looked at it. And all of a sudden, it's like, it didn't work that way. And so once again, it's not up to me to be able to tell people what to do with that information, but at least put it on the table and look at it, because it's real. It's something that, you know, that happened. And regionally, just here in this area and stuff, there are people, not necessarily people who live here. I had did some volunteer work with the cruises. And you have people coming in here and they would ask me these questions. And I grew up with a grandmother that taught me how to be very, you know, cautious with people and, you know, friendly, however. And they would say, and this has happened more than once, Ron, where are the Indians? And so how do you respond to a question like that? Okay, if you got three people on a tour, four people on a tour and stuff, is it, I don't know. Because their lack of understanding, it's just, it just caught me off guard, because I could just, you know, jump up and down and say, what the heck, you know?
So what were they trying to ask you?
Where are the Indians?
Like in what context?
Hollywood.
Oh.
That's the whole thing, as far as here they are in Astoria. And they know that this was areas where indigenous people were. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time, where are they, Ron? Because I'm telling them the story, but they're asking me, where are they? And so it's like a circus, or should I say, you know, a sideshow, being right, able to bring Native people out there and stuff. And it happens. It's no different, you know, as far as I have for colleagues that go down south and they have family events on plantations. For me, personally, I couldn't sit on the ground and drink a bourbon celebrating a family event where somebody had been murdered or killed or whatever it is. And that's like, see, personally, my personal perspective on it. Once again, it's one of these situations as far as my philosophical view as far as history. So I just, you know, I encourage people to be able to look at their own history. And it's not so much the fact that, yeah, the broader scope of it, the fact, you know, when XYZ was settled, some of the younger students, I want people to know that Wounded Knee is not an athletic shoe. And the fact of being able to look at these different things, what you do with that information, like once, as I keep saying, it's a fact, it's up to you. Because I don't really have any, you know, just to be able to put the information out there. So I think, you know, as far as the people out here listening to this, I really encourage them to be able to look at their own history. And like I said, it's not for everyone. And I know everybody's got, you know, skeletons in their closets and stuff they don't want to deal with. But the broader perspective as far as, well, I didn't know that, you know, my grandmother lived in, you know, was Polish, you know, in fact, and she did this or did that. And I think overall, like I said, once again, it's kind of an enlightenment. And I found some of the students, a lot of times they're upset to a degree of not knowing this history. And once again, as I said before, it's not so much to the fact that of pointing a finger at their instructors, the fact the information is not out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I really appreciate your spark, Ron, and just how driven you are to learn these things. And the idea that knowing your own history is empowering, and that can be taken in so many ways, whether you're looking back on the positive things from generations ago or negative things from generations ago. And I think that concept really translates to us as a people too, us as a group, us as Americans or humans, that the less we know about our history, What's the famous saying? If you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You know? Do you agree with that? Is that pretty solid?
Absolutely.
Yeah. The thing that comes to mind now is how little I knew about the Spanish influenza in 1918 coming into this pandemic.
Yes.
And how if there was more general knowledge about how that worked, how that went down, what people went through, what the consequences were, because we really are fighting an age of misinformation and disinformation and bad information. And so Ron mentioned his work on social media. That's kind of how I came to ping you about coming on the show and talking about U.S. history, is that you do these fantastic posts on social media, and it can just be a short anecdote or, you know, but they're always really fascinating. They're always really interesting. And like you said, it's something to... It's a spark to get you on a path, you, the listener, on a path to finding more out about a topic, or, you know, considering how learning more about your own history can empower you. And so maybe I'll take a moment to reframe here. We're about halfway through the show, and this is The Conversation. It's a live call-in show. We've got a special guest today, historian and filmmaker Ron Craig. We're talking about U.S. history and the importance of knowing our own personal histories so that we can be empowered people. The number to call if you've got a comment or a question is 503-325-0010. I wonder if there's a piece of your family history that you learned that made a difference in your life or changed your trajectory. Was there someone in your youth that was inspiring as a history professor or teacher? What are your thoughts on history today? Give us a call, 503-325-0010, and join the conversation. Ron, your social media posts are interesting to me because you are swimming in a sea of bad information with your nuggets of good information. Do you ever feel like you're barking up the wrong tree, or do you feel like that's an important platform? Like what is it about social media that you chose to make that one of your places to promote history?
Well, I think overall, it's one of those things that, you know, I like to shock people, and that's has a positive approach, because to be able to list a specific historical event, and people say, wow, I didn't know that happened. Well, that couldn't have happened. And I'm not saying 100%, but still again, you have a percentage of people who look at it. So to me, I'm placing breadcrumbs, historic breadcrumbs.
Right.
And that's all I want to be able to do, because like in the day, if you have five, if I have five students and two students or one student gets it, to me, that's success, because yeah. they're going to go and pass it to someone else. And that's, once again, with the idea of people sharing different aspects of the history that I posted and stuff. When I see that, I said, yes, that's great. And like I said, the idea that, you know, you think about, you know, the women's movement and stuff in the 20s, things like that, and how it really happened. Well, a lot of it was, you know, was written about, but still, again, it's like, you know, Dunaway, you know, as far as in Portland. I mean, she, people say, oh, that's a park. Well, she was more than just a park, you know, mm-hmm. as far as her name and what she did as far as the women's movement and voting. And so those little things, once again, it's a breadcrumb.
Well, hey, we've got a call. So welcome. You've called the conversation and you're on the air. Go ahead. Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, and I'm so glad to hear you back on the air. I understand you've been swinging from icy towers.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that must have been fun. Anyhow, Reconstruction was a farce. Terrible, terrible farce. Lincoln was not the great emancipator, as we were taught in school. And that's what I wanted to mention, was what we were taught in school was basically propaganda. And thanks to guests, you know, people like Mr. Craig, who enlightens us and challenges us to think, is the only way to put history into perspective. And I think what he had to say about his family and what happened to them is gut-wrenching, and I feel so sad. Anyhow, I just wanted to say thank you for being on the air. Stay there, and I'll talk to you another time.
All right, Paul, thanks for the call. Have a great day.
You too.
503-325-0010, if you've got something to say about the nature of history. This certainly makes me think back to the lessons that we were taught in school and how gilded the history books seemed to be. You know, you put it in a nice binding, you printed it on nice paper, you have some nice pictures, and at a young age, an influential young person just kind of thinks that's what it is, and that is the complete picture. And so it's a real process of awakening to figure out how alive history is and how much effort it takes to really find the truth. Got another call. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yeah, I had a quick question for the professor. I didn't catch his name.
It's Mr. Craig.
Mr. Craig. I was curious to know if he had any information about, I know in Portland recently there was a statue of York that was erected, I believe, on Mount Tabor, and I'm wondering if he had any background on who did that or what the status of that is.
Well, I've got a number of calls that, and as far as my involvement with York and everything and Lewis and Clark, and they said, I know Ron had something to do with it. No, I did not have anything to do with it. But along with that, what we were able to do, as I think maybe mentioned earlier, is that to go over to Northwest Portland and get York Street designated for York. And so we have the statue there, which, like I said, I don't know, you know, as far as the person, what motivated them to do it, obviously the history. But no, I have no idea who did that. And they're still kind of looking around the mystery of it and stuff.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And the graffiti has appeared on it too. Yeah, so
4-month-old in the background here. I apologize. But thank you for
your beautiful. No apologies necessary.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Looks like we've got Jim on the line. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Jim. Okay, I have a couple things about history. I think it is immutable, that as far back as you can go, Grecian, Roman, as far back as we have documentation, and the evidence would indicate that even before we have documentation, that the only thing that's ever, ever changed in human history is technology, period. I would like to know the professor's thoughts on that.
Technology, well, I think it's a I guess it's like putting a motor on your bicycle. You look at it, and I think that it has a plus and minus, because the fact of how things are out there, whether it's about a rock group that has XYZ songs out there, and no, I didn't do that song. Because like I said, once again, as a baby boomer and stuff, to look at how we perceive different things from an entertainment perspective, I use that as an example, because the fact that people who, there are a lot of movies that are coming out now and stuff that are re-examining some of these things as far as the technology. And so I believe, for me personally and stuff, it's a plus, because I, once again, to be able to have a point of history. And with each post that I do, I usually list on the bottom of it as far as that portion, where it came from, and whether it's a university or, you know, it's a nonprofit group, whatever it is, I've done some research. Like I said, you know, a couple of times we've screwed up maybe or stuff like that, but still, again, it's not, you know, the fact that challenging it, I enjoy people to challenge it. And 9 times out of 10, I don't respond to the challenge because the information is out there. I'm on to the next point of history. Because like I said, it's not that I'm putting billboards up all across the field, but in the same time, it is a billboard as far as with the technology, be able to put things out there.
Okay.
So I don't know if that answers it. So.
Well, kind of in a way, but I think mine goes beyond that, and the fact that human beings are human beings, and we're immutable. We are tribal. We can't help that. We're 98% chimpanzee, which is the most violent species on Earth. We're 98% that. History, of course, is written by the winners, so you have to take that with a grain of salt. But again, the only thing that I could really see that has ever changed is the ability to do things that our cultures are able to do only through the advancement of different technologies to allow that to happen. That the person behind history is immutable, and we are still basically the caveman, period. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah, I agree. But I said, once again, it's one of those situations to put whatever, we get people curious to be able to look at.
Yeah, then we could learn something, but then we hit the wall because we learned something, and then we invent possibly a new technology to carry that idea forward. But that, again, is the technology that is allowing that to happen.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree with you.
Okay.
But like I said, that's why I do it from a philosophical perspective. The fact of, you know, I remember a card catalog, you know, as far as how
to
be
able to. I remember the stacks. I was in college trying to,
absolutely,
all that stuff, you know, go to the stacks to get your information. Now I can hit it on the keyboard. And with that in mind, a dear friend of mine who was a philosopher recently passed, and he maintained that we as a species are the dumbest we've ever been in history, because we don't really have to know anything. All we have to do is know how to look it up. And then we can immediately look it up for instant gratification, instant knowledge, instantly forgotten when that thought is satisfied and gone. We don't have to learn anything. I thought, well, that's rather interesting.
It's pretty extreme, I think.
Yeah, well, he was kind of an extreme guy, but, you know, he was smart as a whip.
So Jim, are you saying that throughout time, like the concept of like human evolution or progress as culture and stuff, like that's not really happening? We're the same as we were in the Roman Empire, Ottoman Empire.
Other than the technology, you're right.
That Sumeria, same sort of internal structures of humanity.
Yes, absolutely. The only thing that has changed in that regard, Graham, is the ability to convey that knowledge to others and to learn from it to make our immediate surroundings more pleasant for us, because that's technology. But the basic critter is still the basic critter, and that's us.
Well, and there's so much variation, too.
Oh, yeah, of course there is. But still, you know, that's the bottom line is we be human.
That is an interesting concept.
Well, thank you.
That's why I'm here.
Likewise, my friend. Okay, well, yes. I enjoy your shows back on the air, Graham.
Well, thanks, Jim. Missed you.
Right. I'm going to hang up and listen to the rest of it.
All right, take care.
Bye.
That's an interesting concept that, you know, we're fundamentally the same as we've always been, and we're just building up different structures around us and more and more so of a technological nature. I do think that the presence of technology on the planet is such a significant component of what's happening right now. It's the technosphere is competing with the biosphere at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it, you look at, I could say, from a, you know, history perspective, and I'm not so naive to think it's not an uphill battle, but as I tell people, like I said, I was a marathoner, and you run a marathon. It doesn't matter how fast you run it, but you finish it, that's it. And once again, it's all my philosophical, you know, DNA, or however you want to look at it, to be able to put this information out there. And as far as people looking at it, I guess the technology and everything, like I said, you know, it just, the idea that I have friends that are, you know, writers and written different books, things like that. And I said, well, you can read it online. No, I go and get the book. And it's just one of those things for me. It's just kind of a tactical sort of thing as far as looking at it. I really enjoy the fact that people are, you know, even with the technology and stuff, are looking beyond just a little flashpoint. And as I keep saying, I just want to put the breadcrumbs out there. And if I get, you know, like I say, 2 people out of 6, that's good for me to be able to do it.
Yeah. Oh, we had a caller, but it looks like we lost him. You're welcome to call us back. Sorry if I pushed the wrong button. Like I said, I'm a little rusty. It's been a few weeks. The technology, I tell you. Yeah, well, I love the concept of breadcrumbs, Ron. I love the work that you're doing. I'm really curious if anybody who's listening has some component of their family history that they want to share with us that set them on a different course in their life. Ron, you asked me where my family's from, and I named a couple countries, but that's about as far as I can go with my history past, you know, basically my grandparents' generation. I don't know a whole lot even about my great-grandparents. But if I did learn that my great-grandfather was a cello player or something, you know, maybe I'd want to pick up a cello. Or, you know, if somebody wrote about a topic like, you know, somebody was incredibly into birds and I didn't realize I had a latent interest in birds. Do you consider the concept of genetic memory much, Ron?
Absolutely. Personally and stuff, like I said, you know, I grew up in Portland, and there is, you know, little aspects, you know, as far as historically that are part of my historical DNA. And it's, for me, like I said, my great uncle, he was a musician in the Navy band during World War II. And different aspects of that, he was also a musician with Dinah Washington, studio musician and stuff. And those sort of things that, you know, other members of my family, as far as looking at any interest to me, that was the most fascinating thing to be able to do it. Because then my uncle, my mother's brother, he passed away a number of years ago, was a classical pianist. But the fact that how he satisfied it, he ran the church choir. And so as far as the music, and you find that, you know, all across the board as far as history, because like I said, the idea that you may be in the jazz, but I got to play this classical music now, because even with James DePriest, you look at that guy, I mean, he's phenomenal. The fact of how it's did, and Marian Anderson, Marian Anderson is his aunt. And the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, I think she passed away actually in Portland. So those little flashpoints of stuff that are out there from history, you know, like I said, once again, your own history versus the fact of other little aspects of history that say, wow, it may inspire you to do X, Y, Z, you know?
Yeah, there may be a reason that you like gardening so much.
Yes.
And it may have to do with part of your family's hidden history. So I'm curious, you know, you spent a lot of time looking into York and giving the world a little bit more insight about York. Is there anything on your radar that's kind of capturing your interest in a big way next? Because that was clearly a lot of work. Do you have anything on your horizon that you're looking into?
Well, actually, it's kind of crazy. The York deal has pushed me off into, I guess, how can I say this? James Baldwin. And all of a sudden, James Baldwin is at the forefront. And I think the York thing has just pushed me into other aspects of it. But to back up, when I first saw that somebody had established this sculpture at Mount Tabor and stuff, it was almost like, oh my God, somebody's listening. Mm-hmm. And I think for me to revisit it, because there is another gentleman who's been, Hassan Davis, and he and I shared the stage during the whole bicentennial and in different areas. He's from Louisville, Kentucky, and I'm from Oregon, Portland, Oregon and stuff. And so the fact he was the buckskin guy and I was the blue blazer guy. And whenever I get the call for the lecture, I said, I don't do buckskin, but I have one shot that I think I posted of me dressed up as York. And that was the fact that as far as Court Clatsop, we're doing this event where they were signing the tree down there in Seaview and everything. So the idea, they asked me what I dress up, you know. And so, I told people I don't do what I don't do it. But the fact it empowered me to be able to put on this authentic clothes to dress up like York, the fact that it's never gone. I'm still there. I was back in Indianapolis the year before last lecturing on it. So I'm there, and it just keeps going. And I'm in contact with a number of scholars and things like that as far as whether there's any change as far mm-hmm. as how people look at it. But the York DNA is on my front page every day on a regular basis because, like I said, again, the people, like I said, once again, the technology and social media, there are so many people still don't have a clue of what he did. And not to diminish what, you know, Lewis did or Clark, you know, as far as Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, what they did and stuff, but let's put it all together and stuff, because that's 33 members of the expedition. There was a microcosm of what this country was at the time in 1804, 1805, you know. And so I think that people be able to look at it and knowing, you know, how empowering that would have been for people to know about it. So I think still today, for me, it's still an incredible flashpoint to get people to understand that, to be able to look at history. And I don't really like to use it, sort of re-examine the history, but the idea of being able to look at history, because once something is put placed there, you know, I go back to York, the fact that he was a dancing dandy and he was, you know, having sexual relationship with all the Native American women and stuff like that. Well, people never looked at that as far as what was really going on. Number one, it was a military expedition. And number two was the fact that he was in a position that within the indigenous tribes and stuff, you did have intercourse with another tribe if you thought that tribe was superior. And people don't even realize a lot of times that they, Native tribes stuff, which I spoke to in oral history, the fact they thought York was the leader of the expedition. Hmm. And the fact of doing that, and they used that, but they did not want to be able to translate that. And it's not pointing fingers. They're out there, you know, areas they've never seen before. And all of a sudden they realize they're calling this guy Big Medicine and all this stuff, you know, and he's a slave. And so I think that people need to take those narratives and look at it from that oral history side and say, it's real, it happened, and to be able to do it. So for me, it's still, like I said, with, you know, the deals with James Baldwin and stuff. So I got involved with him a number of years ago. But the idea, once again, from a historical perspective, I think people don't, what he was saying at the time and how it's really, you know, going on today, I think it's really kind of, for me, lack of a better term, cool, be able to look at it.
So if James Baldwin isn't a household name for someone listening, give me the 5-sentence bio.
Put it this way. He was seeing things that were out there, but nobody had really had addressed them, these different circumstances and stuff like that. And the fact that this is very relevant, he was gay. And the fact that as a black man, gay, during the 40s, 50s, stuff like that, because he was an expat. He lived in Europe and stuff. And Buford Delaney, and I say that, people will be able to look at it, he was also gay, living in Paris. This is U.S. history. And the fact of what he was writing and all those things that were going on, the fact that all of a sudden, within the last, you know, 5 years, it's out there. And I think that people, once again, looking at the history, people were not looking at it. You go back and look at it, so, well, whoa. And people said, well, is he still alive? You know, or where was he from? Things of that nature. And I don't expect, like, it's a literature sort of thing as far as his writing. But I just think, once again, it's these different things that are out there that people have not looked at from a historical perspective. Because even to be able to look at some of his things he's doing and then, you know, okay, go online, technology, and find out who he was. Oh, my God, I never had no clue. So I think it's just one of, as I said before, one of those hidden heroes. Mm-hmm. And that's the deal. U.S. history and hidden heroes. That's what I keep doing. He's just one of our heroes.
Yeah, well, he unfortunately didn't live a very long life. He died young of stomach cancer in his early 60s, but he was a novelist, playwright, essayist, poet, and activist. And
yeah.
And there's a breadcrumb for you, so go learn more about James Baldwin and yeah. You know, check out some of his novels or short stories or plays. And cool. Well, I would be remiss if I didn't take an opportunity to let folks that are listening know that this is our spring pledge drive, and we're doing it the same way we did the last couple, with no volunteers in the building. It's a challenge, but we're doing our best, and we're also doing our best to just stay on the air and keep the services happening despite the challenging times that we're in, including when systems fail and not being able to bring in as much help as we normally would. But we appreciate the fact that our listeners and members stick with us and help us through the hard times and celebrate the good times with us. And so if KMUN means something to you, KCPB as well, you can earmark a donation for the KCPB side of what we do, classical music and news. But we're going to run this pledge drive until the station's birthday on April 17. And we'd love you to come into the family. We love getting new members. We love hearing from old members and one-time gifts, sustaining donations, however you like to do it. But this is a community investment. And I think a 38-year track record means that we're doing something right. So once we once we wrap up the show, you're welcome to call 503-325-0010 and make a pledge of support. You can also go online, coastradio.org, and you can also mail us a check to P.O. Box 269, Astoria, Oregon, 97103. And I'm just going to take a moment to thank some of the folks who have donated so far. The list is long, but I'm going to get through it because we haven't been able to thank them as profusely as we normally do. So big thanks to Cindy and Josh, Elaine, Lloyd and Janet, Janet, Covert Properties, Jim, Catherine, Gail, John, Tony, Elizabeth, Harry and Patricia, Aaron, Dean, Betty, Douglas, Mark and Rachel, David and Kathleen. Thank you all. And then we've got a few more. Last week, Karen, Lori, Uta and Lucian, Wallace, Ken and Barbara, Donna, Becky, Raymond, Larry and Sharon. We've got Terry from Seaside, Ann and Manzanita, Gail and Russell and Yakima. Love it when people listen from afar to our web stream. John and Peggy in Portland. I can keep going. We've got Matthew, Kathleen, Cheryl and Jacob, Bernie, George, Carol and George, Lori, Jim, Hannelore, Audrey, Steve, Patrick, and Connie. And that's not a complete list, but that's a brief glimpse at the folks who've supported us so far in our spring pledge drive. So won't you please do the same? Renew your membership or become a new member and become part of the family. 503-325-0010. We'll sign off from the show in about 5 minutes, and we'll be happy to take your calls then. In the meantime, there's still time to join the conversation and talk about something from history that that meant a lot to you, or a lesson that you weren't taught, that you didn't learn until much later. And like Ron says, we're not wagging our fingers at our instructors, but if the information wasn't there, we couldn't learn it. And so, Ron, I appreciate your optimism and just the importance of laying those breadcrumbs, the importance of knowing our history to create a better future. It's inspiring stuff, and I'm just thrilled you were able to come on the show today.
Well, like I said, the opportunity to be able to speak to people about it. Once again, I keep going from the philosophical sort of springboard, the idea of getting the word out there and stuff and what people do with it, something, you know, and people could ignore it. But like I said, at the same time, I think to be able to talk to some of the more senior people in individuals' family, and when they're comfortable with it, and talk to them about different aspects of what they recall as far as their life and stuff. And like I said, we're not talking about, you know, a 2-hour interview or stuff, but if you get 10 minutes or whatever it is, like I said, once again, you find out, well, I didn't know Uncle So-and-so did this, was a lieutenant colonel in an army, or or he climbed Mount Everest, you know, and things like that. And so he's been gone for 2 years and said, oh my God. So that's why I'm interested in skiing, you know, because of that, you know, so, because I think, you know, the whole thing historical, you know, people do their little DNA stuff like that, but the historical DNA to me, it's always been important. And like I say, I don't push it out there, the fact for everyone, but the fact that I live it on a daily basis and stuff. And like, you know, being in this area is like people talk about Lewis and Clark. I said, I crossed Lewis and Clark Trail, Corps of Discovery, probably six times a day. Mm-hmm. And they look like, what are you talking about? I said, never mind. But like I say, it's so much, you know, history, you can feel it.
Well, I think your inquisitiveness and your passion for this stuff is infectious. And so I've got the bug, and I appreciate the work you're doing. We did get a call coming in, so good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. First, I'm sad that people think that we're no better than chimps and we haven't progressed with time. I think we're not that tribal. I think that there's a lot of things that are going on that are spurring our hatefulness towards each other. That's not part of our nature.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that we do carry some DNA information with us. I'm Scottish, and when I was in Scotland following a snowplow and was looking for directions for a B&B, my partner was Polish, and the Scottish rug was so heavy, the man told us how to find where we were looking for, and he looks at me and goes, you understood that? I'm going, I did, totally. And I think there is something that's in us that connects with our ancestry.
Yeah, I remember reading about, you know, people who experienced famine and then what happens to the genetics of their offspring in relationships with food and things. Like, there's so much that we don't know about how our brains and our bodies work, but it's just fascinating.
Yeah, and I want to bring up one other thing, Graham.
Sure.
Does everybody know that the Astoria deer, which is, I know, lived here for 40 years, have all been slaughtered?
I did not know that the deer had been slaughtered. Where did you find that out?
Well, I Googled it, wanting to know where the Astoria deer was, because I've missed them. There was mothers and babies, and they'd been here all along. And it said that the city had given permission for night hunting at the airport.
Hmm.
And they're all gone, and I don't know if anybody's noticed, but there's no raccoons around anymore either. All gone.
Wow. Well, thanks for the heads up on that.
Uh-huh.
And thanks for the call. Well, I think that just about wraps up our show today, Ron. I hope you'll come back and talk more about U.S. history with us as a regular thing, maybe a little module of the week so that folks can have something to chew on. You can give us a breadcrumb every week, and we can explore a little bit of our history together.
Absolutely. Like I said, you know, one of the things, bread. Yeah, that's why I love that. It's a staple. So, yes, absolutely. I want to thank you guys for having me and stuff to be able to put the word out.
Great. Well, we'll sign off with you for now, and we'll look forward to talking with you again, Ron.
Take care. Thank
you. Take care. Thanks to everyone who joined us today on The Conversation. My name is Graham. Always thrilled to be your host. Missed you while I was gone. Glad to be back. And I do hope that you will call and support during our spring pledge drive. Phone lines are now ready for you to flood us with calls. We've got three open lines, and the number is 503-325-0010. I'm just so incredibly proud of our volunteers for doing what they've done throughout the pandemic, learning new skills, learning how to record shows from home. It's created some extra work on our end, and so unfortunately, our budget didn't go down, which means we still need to do our pledge drives and we still need that support from you to keep this service going. And hopefully it means something to you. It's a pay what you can deal. If you need to listen for free, we sure do welcome that. But if you can afford $100 a year or $10 a month, or maybe you're fortunate enough to be a major donor, we've got some programs for you. Don't hesitate to send me an email, graham@coastradio.org. And you know, I think maybe you've heard, too, a little bit about our website being in flux with Coast Radio porting over to KMUN.org.